All right, let me jump on in here to the Right Side Way monologue, and I'll remind you guys that Southern Immediate Care, a chain of clinics that covers a huge swath of ground across our overly broad listening area, Southern Immediate Care in places like Gadsden, Anniston, Atala, six more locations around the Birmingham area, they are indeed the sponsors of the daily Right Side Way monologue, open 7 days a week. We'll see all ages, and we're proud to have them as a sponsor of the show. So here's the deal. There's a report out today. It's fairly fresh. It broke yesterday afternoon, an exclusive on CNN. There's new camera footage from troops who were at the Abbey Gate at the Kabul airport when the Biden administration just so recklessly yanked our military out of Afghanistan. And it seems to show in this video that there was more going on during the attack that killed 13 of our troops and over 170 civilians. The crux of the report is to say that the Pentagon investigation was misleading, that there was evidence that it was not a lone wolf suicide bomber like the Biden administration said. There is now footage off of a soldier's GoPro, I don't know why we've never seen it before, that followed the actual explosion, indicating that there was in fact a coordinated attack, which right after the bombing had episodes, multiple episodes actually, of small arms fire. Okay. I'm still digesting the report. I don't know yet what to think of it all. The implications from it are that the Biden administration was trying to hide that more took place. Could be. But the secondary implication to the report seems to lay blame at the feet of young troopers and Marines who were neck deep in the fog of war. The report, issued now some several years later, appears to blame U.S. service members for firing their weapons and indicates that civilians were shot in the melee that followed the blast. The blast that had just killed 13 of their own. And I'll be honest with you, if this is CNN's attempt, if that's what their plan is to discolor the service of those service members, then I have a problem with it. And I would ask the editors and reporters if their intent is to defame soldiers who had just had their rules of engagement literally blown out the window when an attack killed nearly 200 people right before their very eyes. Every soldier, and I mean every soldier, goes to war when they're told with the intent of coming home as soon as they're able. It's been that way from time immemorial. And y'all, you all know, bad things happen in war, and I will never excuse criminal activity, I won't. But I do suggest that when it comes to U.S. troops defending each other in trying conditions, that we should always err on the side of the soldier who went where they were told and were knee-deep in the blood and bullets when life-changing decisions had to be made. Now, if you've been listening to this show for a bit, you know the military, particularly the U.S. Army, has played a huge role in my life. I grew up on Army installations. I watched my grandfather and my father both serve with distinction for full careers. My earliest memory of my dad is the day he returned from Vietnam. Going to war for my dad meant that he had missed two of my first 5 years, but he came home. Agent Orange exposure stayed with him for the rest of his days, but he lived a full life. He was the best man at my wedding. My grandfather, he served through three wars, in entering the service at the onset of World War II and staying gone until it was over several years later. He was a glider rider, a paratrooper, with the 82nd Airborne Division, which was supposedly a voluntary thing. My grandmother, though, she talks about when she received a scratchy long-distance call one day, and she could hear him saying, "Mary Frances, I'm with the 82nd Airborne Division now." And she asked him, "Mac, what's airborne?" And he replied, "I don't know. When I find out, I'll tell you." But Granddaddy spent 3 years gone, and he was gone again when he served as General Westmoreland's Corps Logistics Officer at Quy Nhon in Vietnam, the same time, by the way, that my dad was there on his second tour. I know that for both of them, their wartime service was defining in many ways. There's something intensely and sharply and distinctly defining about serving in the crucible of a war zone, and I know that some of you can attest to that personally. But like I said, they both came home, and my life was better because of both of them setting foot on U.S. soil again. In 2004, I personally did my second tour in the global war on terror. My time in Afghanistan was still very fresh when I got orders to redeploy again with my team to Baghdad. My first tour overseas had been completely unconventional as we operated as a small independent special operations element out in the middle of nowhere. But in 2004, I was back to big army, high and tight haircut, serving on a FOB in central Baghdad attached to an infantry battalion. My host unit changed a few months in, and I wound up being with some of the finest men that I have ever served with during one of the most heated times of the Shia militia uprisings. Our FOB was rocketed and mortared on a regular basis, and the battalion staff once tallied up over 120 rounds of indirect fire that landed in and around our perimeter in a 5-day period. We lost several good men, But their loss never stopped us from rolling out the wire to do what was needed. One of the earliest car bombs in the war went off next to my convoy just across from the Green Zone. It had a devastating effect. We saw crazy things happen. We laughed a lot because the jokes seemed funnier over there somehow. We griped about the food, the heat, and the missions. We griped about how long we were going to be there and how out of touch our higher headquarters always seemed to be, the same kind of gripes that soldiers have had since soldiers were created. And we took care of each other. And we would have done anything for each other, and no amount of griping or complaining could ever cover up the fact that unit pride was a real thing. But we all wanted to go home. We wanted to go home whole, intact, and together. And then the day finally came that my relief team came over. And man, they were just like newbies. Uniforms were fresh, their boots didn't look a bit scuffed, and they were just wide-eyed. And we felt like we had been there for 10 years, like we were seniors looking at freshmen. I sent most of my team home soon thereafter, and one of my best NCOs stayed with me to train the new guys. And we showed them everything. We took them everywhere. We told them things they didn't want to hear. We rolled our eyes when they stumbled, but they were catching on. And then came the word that a major operation was planned for one of our worst sectors. At a place in central Baghdad where the slum of Sadr City joined the almost slum of Adamiya, we were participating in a cordon and search operation that lasted throughout an entire night. It was early November 2004, and the air in Baghdad had finally reached a seasonal coolness. Two companies of infantry, some light and some mechanized, surrounded a whole neighborhood, and we went forcibly door to door. With Apache gunships flying figure eights on a station at rooftop level, we kicked in doors, we did what troops do in an urban setting, and we did well. The element of surprise and the professionalism of the troops met with a capture of 7 insurgents and some weapons caches, and right as the sun was coming up, I walked back to the center of the perimeter, and there was the battalion command sergeant major, standing next to his up-armored Humvee. And I'll never forget him looking at me and saying, "Hey, sir, I guess you get to head home now." And it hit me that this all-nighter that we just did on the streets of Baghdad was my final mission. And he said, "You want a cup of coffee?" And he reached into his vehicle, and no kidding, he pulled out one of those old-school green Stanley thermoses, and he poured me a cup of coffee in the silver lid. It was the best cup of coffee I have ever had. The absolute best cup of coffee I ever had. I've had some good coffee in my time, but man, I'm going to tell you right now, nothing beats that one. So yeah, going back to that report from CNN. Troops come home. They should be allowed to come home with honor. I questioned the decisions of the higher-ups, the Biden administration, the Lloyd Austin, Mark Milley Pentagon. I questioned them a lot. But when it comes to decisions made under fire by troops who are in harm's way, my default is to err on the part of the troops, who just want to know that what they did and what they had to do and where they were and when they were there was on purpose and with intent and with honor so that they and their buddies can come home. And yep, best cup of coffee I ever had. That's a wrap for The Right Side Way. Yeah, I'm going to tell you right now, I have thought about that multiple times, and I've had some gourmet coffees, and I've had, you know, the opportunity to grind the beans fresh and make my own, but I'm going to tell you right now, when Sergeant Major poured me that cup of coffee from an old green thermos that looked like it had been around the world a few times, right there in the center of Baghdad at my end of my last mission, best cup of coffee I ever had. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.